We do like Phil, though. Yes. Don't use this for the beginning of the show.
We love Phil. You know, we've been doing, like, indie comic book noise for, like, 7 years now.
Yeah, but there was 2 years where we didn't release any episodes.
All right. We're ready.
All right. All right. Yeah. Ah. Dupe. Dupe. Well, dupes.
Damn. Okay.
It's like... If you... It's like if he was on the defensive line trying to guess the snap count, he'd be like in your face.
Every time. Every time.
How does he know?
He wonders why I leave those little snippets in the beginning of every episode.
Oh, geez.
You have to go for a false timing of like, you have to go on like the odd note start, you know? Start on the 3, not the 4.
Yeah, I don't think there's any penalty for offsides in this one.
This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, listeners, to Indie Comic Book Noise, the penultimate episode, 449. Who knows what lurks in the heart of episode 450. You'll have to stay tuned to find out, because right now you have yourself a little treat. 449 features myself, Andrew the LA Rabbit, Super Steve in the Bunker. Say hi, Steve.
Hello.
And holding down the snowy climbs up there in the Great White North is WX Kev.
I'm coming to you live from my igloo.
Dude, we're really going to have to come up with something for this 450 at this point. You've built it into something that's going to be impossible to deliver on.
Well,
you know how 400 is a big deal. Well,
I might have to do a bunch of point episodes. Is how we cheated around that one.
Like cover the Gru series or something.
Indie Comic Book Noise is part of the Deliberate Noise Network. Yay, Deliberate Noise, which has all sorts of wonderful shows covering various elements of comic books. There's some pop culture stuff. There's a show called Marvel Noise, hosted by one Super Steve Raker. Talks about Marvel stuff from the comic book world, the TV world, the film world.
You do it too. Come on, we all do it. We just did it and we're ready to do it again. Don't tell me you don't do it.
And this show, unlike Marvel Noise, has the warning at the front because occasionally we use language that some people may not like. I think it's perfectly fine, but we do leave that notice there. So if your sensitive ears cannot take the occasional curse word, we bid you adieu. You can find old episodes of Indie Comic Book Noise on our website, coincidentally enough called Indie Comic Book Noise, INDIE, Comic Book Noise. I don't think anyone would spell it INDY, so maybe I don't need to put that in there. Have we seen Indie like that, like Indiana Jones type?
Yeah, just Indiana Jones is the only one I could think of. Even like, well, how about the Indie 500?
Yeah. So not Indianapolis comic book noise, I guess. You can find us on the internet at Twitter, Indie Comic Book N, because of character limits. We also have individual handles that you can figure out if you follow the show.
Do we curse when Phil's not here?
I used to have to curse occasionally to stop Kevin's secret recordings. Would then try and slip into Marvel Noise.
I remember that. We did a lot of episodes together.
That was my clever way, because then I know he couldn't use it in Marvel Noise. So I just slipped in the expletive from here to there once in a while. And sometimes some of the books we cover, and when I say books, I can also include media properties, other tie-ins, adaptations, basically anything that isn't Big Two directly, solely owned and operated by. Some of those properties might have more mature themes. Although I gotta say, some of that Marvel and DC stuff is pretty edgy content as well. Like,
yeah,
I think it's funny that people with young kids are always, whenever I see them posting about giving their kids comics, half the time it's like old Marvel from the Silver Age, or even sometimes from the 80s, because they know that stuff is safe. Like, you don't have to worry about some questionable questions floating your way.
You just have to worry about guns going into holsters back then.
And people smoking.
Exactly.
So, as is tradition here at Indie Comic Book Noise, we just keep an informal situation. We talk about whatever's on our mind. We try and keep it, you know, loose with limited structure. But we also don't want to take up all your free time. So we try and keep the recent shift in the show, which I'm sure longtime listeners have noticed. We've gone to sort of like an hour-ish. I mean, if it goes longer, it goes longer. But I try and keep it there and with more frequent posting. But if people have an objection, you can always leave us a comment on the Twitter or the Facebook. Look at me trying to get social engagement, guys. Those are the metrics that the kids care about now.
Then we must be doing better, I guess.
Then we can revisit that and maybe go back to our more rambling style of irregular release schedule and irregular content length. But I think this is a good amount, what we're doing. But, you know, hey, correct me.
I give it 2 Bob cars.
Good. That'll double our listenership. Ha!
I mean, you're getting no con men this year, so you got to fill this with something.
Yeah, I mean, when we did our big retrospectives,
what's up with that?
They go longer and everything. It's not a rule per se. As should be obvious, I just have this rough amount of, it feels like that's a good chunk of an episode to have about an hour here or there and then go on. Although I got to say, in all honesty, as an formerly avid podcast listener, I haven't listened to anything since the lockdown. Like, I just downloaded all the new ones and I had like a month's worth.
See, I've had more time now to listen to them, so I should really start listening to them again.
I don't have the... My issue is I used to do it on my commute, and that's been significantly reduced.
Yeah, the routine's changed, then the times that you were doing things have changed too, you know? It's funny. Some things I have more time for than I used to, and other things I'm like not getting to as much. It's odd, but that goes with the awkwardness of the whole situation.
Yeah, sometimes I actually read less, which is a weird thing, but, you know.
I'm finally reading more and more and more. Even I got my DCBS box and it was just like a little box.
How are you still getting boxes?
Because I buy a lot of books about comics and art books and things of that nature versus, you know, new issues per se. And I do the half month, like the middle of the month thing. So I had what was left over from the last half of last month before things shut down too. So I had a couple of trades in there and stuff. But what I was a real treat is they are slightly larger than comic book size. And it's 2 books from Clover Press that were $13 a pop on the cover. And a discount if you're buying it through a discount book dealer. And the covers are similar. They're those not hardcover, but they're more rigid than trade paperback covers. Like, you know, the ones that are like larger than the pages inside slightly, like the new Marvel Treasury editions. They're like flexible yet sturdy. You know what I mean? No?
Flexible yet sturdy.
Yeah, they're like sort of poly, but they're still like, you know, they're still paper-ish, but it's like what the new Marvel Treasury editions
are like. I was just
going like
to say the Marvel Treasuries are like.
Yeah, it's like that, but these are smaller size books, but they have a great feel in the hands, and they feel sturdier, and actually the interior pages are a nice thick stock, too.
So they're more like a manga or something?
No, they're larger than a comic book, and they are as thick as about, I don't know, six or seven comics, maybe. And one of them is Kevin Eastman's Totally Twisted Tales that feature three stories written by Eastman with art by Simon Bisley. One of them's a 24-pager, one of them's a 36-pager, and one of them's a 23-pager, plus there's like six pages of pinups and variant covers and stuff. But I won't go through what each story is, but the first one, for example, is called The Very Angry Seven, and it is a nice takeoff on what Eastman is famous for, given his Mutant Ninja Turtle pedigree. And this is about like an urban garden that is under assault by the nearby forces, we'll say, and one of the tenants there is trying to protect the garden, and the old man is trying to destroy the garden, that kind of thing. And there's some back and forth, and he dumps a whole bunch of radioactive poop that he's kind of been like settling and throwing all the most nasty things in this big container, and then he finally goes up on the roof and dumps it onto the garden. But instead of destroying the garden, it creates these mutated garden critters, and they are the Very Angry Seven. There's Nuclear Newt, who's the leader. There's Carnivorous Canary, Nefarious Gnat, who's my favorite, Monstrous Mole, Rapid Rat, Suicide Shrew, and the Battle Snail. And the story's told over a really long period of time of how they defend the garden, and it goes through the boy who lived upstairs his lifespan and the garden itself until he's an old man at the end, and you realize he's been telling the whole story to a nurse that he, you know, is caring for him. Really fun stuff, and I mean, I love Bisley's stuff, so this was a nice package to just get a bunch of good Biz art all in one place. And then the second one from Clover Press is in conjunction with Yo Books, which is Craig Yo's publishing imprint. Being Craig Yo's friend on Facebook is like reason enough to be on Facebook. I mean, he doesn't allow gum chewing, but his posts are always pretty fun. He seems like a really good guy. And this one is called Pirates, and it's the same format as the other. This has nine reprinted stories and nine old cover pinup pages of a slew of classic pirate comics from the 40s and 50s with art by Will Eisner and Frank Frazetta and Reed Crandall. And there's a reprint of Norman Sanders's Bloody Blackbeard from an old classic Illustrated's World Around Us in 59. Really fun. There's Captain Daring. There's Black Roger. One story that's my favorite one is in the book is The Hawk. That's from Fiction House's Jumbo Comics 102 in 1947 with art by Will Eisner. And in this tale, the King of Carnage, Captain Claw, has been apprehended by the Hawk, and he's being held on Captain Hawk's boat awaiting trial. And Claw's men pay off the guards and stage a mutiny, take over the vessel and dump Hawk overboard and make off with his boat and his girl, the beautiful and buxom Lady Scarlet. Hawk survives the ordeal and he confronts Claw after he rallies, and he catches up with the crew on Skull Island just as they're about to burn Lady Scarlet on a crucified X. That's just the first story, too. It's just really fun pirate stories. High adventures on the high seas, and the art is really, really nice. When you see the Frazetta stuff, it's really fantastic.
Those Yo books are quite, I find that they're generally pretty well put together and at a pretty decent price point as well. I think it's a nice intersection of the content you're going to get at a price. I mean, they could have nicer, there are certainly nicer collections, but then I feel like you pay more for the nicer reproductions, if that's fair.
Yeah, I bet you're thinking of the Ditko ones in particular, right?
Yes, because I have, and agreed. I have all manner of various reprints of that stuff, and I just feel like it's a really great entry point, I guess, for lack of something better.
This collection is one of the nicest presentations I've seen of his stuff. I've seen the way that they're presenting it here, because some of the pages, like the unused covers and covers, are like scanned from the original art. So you can see that it's like pencils and blue line and that kind of thing, which is cool. And he does that with some of his books, with some of the vintage archival stuff. He did an oversized Betty and Veronica and Archie covers book that was a hardcover. And a whole bunch of pages inside, much to my delight, were like as if it was an artist's edition of Archie stuff. Really fun. I like his sensibilities. And you're right, some of that Ditko stuff is pretty rough in its presentation, but some of the other stuff, I mean, there's a real variety. He's got those books that are like the psychoanalysis and voodoo and like the grouped ones, ghosts and zombies, and that some of those are hardcover, some of them are softcover, some both, I think. A real variety of product comes out of Yo Books. He's a good curator.
Yes. Well, like I said, some of that stuff, it's just would be difficult probably to run down. And it sort of ties in a little bit to the book I'm going to talk about, which was a huge, significant reprint job. I wanted to discuss Miss Fury, the Tarpe Mills. They had a volume, The Sensational Sundays, 1941 to 1944, edited by Trina Robbins. And it's a big, oversized hardcover from IDW, the same, you know, imprint of Yo Books. And I got this out from the library prior to all the libraries and everything going south.
So it's reading all the Golden Age books.
So it's in my possession now. And I was really curious, again, as I mentioned in the last episode, that Hope Nicholson book turned me on. I mean, I was familiar because obviously Miss Fury's been rebooted several times. And Tarpe Mills is kind of famous. You know, there weren't that many lady cartoonists back in the day. And I like the Black Fury concept. So she's the upper crust who dresses up in the cat suit. And
this Wait a minute. Miss Fury is, or Tarpe Mills? Because that's the cool thing. She wasn't just one of the few female cartoonist at the time who was making a solid living, but she was like the if you think of you know, what you might think of like the Bob Kane of Batman, and how he was just more of a front man and really lived the high life of being a socialite and trying to move in circles that he probably wasn't ready for. She, on the other hand, was a real socialite. She was a real debutante, and she was like a high society fashion type character who you would see stories about where she was or what she was doing, like in the paper, in the society pages and that kind of thing. So I find that, you know, the history that surrounds her as a creator and the character, and with the character's story, and she was very accomplished. Of all of these old reprints of some of the old good girl type. I mean, we've had this discussion before about how the Golden Age stuff is pretty rough, right?
Yes.
But I find that this stuff, and we'll see what you think about it in a minute, but I found these collections to be very readable and enjoyable. And, you know, I like some of the provocative aspects of it too, but it's fun knowing that it's coming, who it's coming from.
Yes, well, what I really like about it is it's like a fashion plate almost. Like, right. Everyone is dressed very nice. Like, even like the nurses and the maids and Black Fury herself. And it's kind of her origin. She ends up having the same outfit that she's supposed to go to this party with. So she ends up taking this ridiculous outfit that she got from some trip to Africa. And then she's like, well, this way no one will possibly wear the same thing. And then she gets embroiled in a side adventure. And that starts her tale of daring do and woe and melodrama as it proceeds. My one, while I love all the outfits and I love the characters, I will say all the ladies from the neck down are identical. Like, she has one like the typical kind of hourglass, classical fashion model beauty look. And all the ladies look like that. The men tend to be same, very similar, like big upper, classical V kind of upper body. But if you want to just look at people dressed in stylish suits, and I feel that it's a really nice collection in the beginning. My issue, and I do have to admit, Steve, the one thing I found in the beginning, it's a lot of Black Fury, but then it shifts. She has a falling out with her fiancé, and the fiancé goes down to South America, and the whole thing is right in the backdrop of the war. And yeah. I do like her female nemesis, who is always getting running into trouble with the men, and her female nemesis is always playing men against each other. But at one point, as an act of betrayal, they brand a swastika into her forehead.
Ouch.
So she always has to keep her hair down or wear hats or anything. But I found that once it got away from the opening adventures of the Black Fury and got just to them and the melodrama and the romance, I will admit, while I looked at the entire thing, I didn't read it as closely. I think it got really wordy in some of these things where everyone's explaining their motivations again and again. And I just wanted to look at the pretty art and kind of tell the story. Yeah. It's usually like an 11-page grid with like the top has the bigger panel that has the character and the name and the signature, and then three panels. But once in a while, they have a slightly bigger, maybe they'll do three at the top or a big one at the bottom. In fact, the collection ends with a nice portrayal of the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. Again, this is set in World War II, and I really like that. And I love the fashion. I love the thing. But I got to be honest with you, I don't know. I think the way they tell these newspaper ones sometimes kind of wears on me, and I end up just enjoying looking at it more than reading. It's dense. You get your money's worth if you feel like reading.
I like the regular oversized volume that has everything in it, and especially the second volume in particular, the second hardcover. It's good stuff. I'm sure art reminds me a little bit of like a female version of Matt Baker, who's another one of my favorites from that era. Again, drawing everybody, looking so handsome and all the clothes and all that stuff. It's cool.
Yeah. So I really, I'm super glad I got it, went through it. I thought I would get more into the story aspects of it. Some of the mellow, like her trying to get her man back and this, that, and the different. There's stuff there. It just, the way it goes is maybe not for Andy. But man, I stared at this book a lot. I took in the art for sure, and like I said, I love all the fashion and the style, and it just, even the bad guys back then wore suits and everything. But yeah, that ties in. But that's an IDW imprint also, but that's from the proper one, and they did I believe a second volume too of it. But like I said, this was a library acquisition, and the library currently is not taking new books in or out or whatever.
Yeah, I got to look to see what my volumes are, if it's the complete Sundays or just the complete overall. I am see what they are.
Yeah, I've read the Popeye one. I have the Wonder Woman, the Star Wars. I enjoy some of them, just some that, because they have to, I understand why, it's, you have to kind of reset the table a lot so people can pick it up at any point, but it can just get, I know sometimes people complain about Marvel's 80 books for that, for always having to get everyone on board, but man, read some of these newspaper strips. Do you want more from me, or do you want to go? Does someone else want to?
I'll do it if, Kevin, do you really got nothing? Nothing for us?
I really have nothing.
All right.
If you want to ask me trivia questions or something, that would be fun. That'd be okay. I don't have any other ideas.
Just make a mark at the time of, so you can get rid of Kevin's drowning. All right.
Nice.
I can come up with something. I got another one that we can get into here. I just finished reading The Few and the Cursed. Well, finished reading what's available currently. It's from Timberwolf Entertainment. I first found it as a Kickstarter, I think maybe issue 2 It's a 6-issue limited series. And the first 5 issues are available on Comixology digitally. And that's what happened to me is I after this kickstarting the second issue, then I ended up seeing the first issue on Comixology and saw that they were eventually ending up there. And when I saw the next few Kickstarters come along for the next subsequent issues, rather than, you know, it's hard for me to justify those $5 digital single issue Kickstarters, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, you and I are tell me, yeah, I'm.
You and I are both super backers. We've backed a lot of Kickstarter projects in our day. And, you know, some of the guys are even pumping out, like, you know, single issues that they are having it be $10 for the digital. And it's like, I don't care if this booby's in it or not. That's not going to justify a $10 digital price point for a thing that's not even a complete story, you know, and who knows what you're going to do with the rest of it, that kind of thing. Even Jimmy Palmiotti stuff, who I always enjoy when I eventually see it. You know, his new Kickstarter looks really interesting, but again, it's like a $5 digital price point for a first issue of what's going to be a 4 or 5 issue miniseries. It's that's tough.
I'm unfortunately taking a little break from new Kickstarters just because of, you know, things I feel are in a fluid situation. So, but people seem to be just putting them out like on regular schedules. So I guess it's working for everybody.
Well, there's other one. I mean, there's other, I always do the Dan Parent Die Kitty Die Kickstarters, and those end up being, you know, you pledge for the graphic novel, the whole collection, and you get the PDFs of the single issues that will eventually go on sale, you know, on Comixology and that kind of thing along the way. But it's like you pledge for the project, not just the one issue, and it ends up, you know, having all other kinds of premiums and things along those lines. People can do real nice jobs with these Kickstarters, and there's some guys who I'm definitely loyal to and will always jump on. But I can't do the $5 digital single issue dynamic for either a known or an unknown. It's just too much, Andrew. It's too much. And especially when I see that then it comes on Comixology for $2.99, which is, so what I did was I picked up the remaining issues I had gotten from the Kickstarter. I had gotten the first 2 issues. I got the other 3, and there's one that I think they did a Kickstarter for it already, so it's just a matter of when they're going to release it digitally. They also have a Chronicles of the Few and the Cursed anthology book that's like a trade size collection that has a bunch of short stories in the same world. And it's a really quality product. The whole idea is a great idea. It is from writer Felipe Cagno, C-A-G-N-O, and artist Fabiano Neves, who I remember from Dynamite. He did some Red Sonja. He did the Marvel Zombies Army of Darkness, you know, Evil Dead crossover. He's a solid storyteller, and he draws babes really nicely and has real sharp finishes to his style. He's good. And this Few and the Cursed story is called The Crows of Mana Olana. And it's a dystopian Western. Mid-1800s, there was an unknown event that dried up most of the world's water. And this is almost 100 years later in the mid-1900s, and the whole world is like a desert Western landscape with bandits and isolated small settlements of survivors, you know, scrapping for sustenance and safety and stuff. Enter the Curse Chasers, who are tough hombres who fight mystical and occult threats and try to bring balance to this crazy world. And the Few and the Cursed series follows the redhead, otherwise unnamed Curse Chaser, and she's on this mission to chase down a pair of cursed crows. And she's got a great design. She's like a trench coat cowboy type, few words, very capable, a real ass kicker. I think they also just did a Kickstarter that wrapped up for like an art book, because there's lots of variant covers and pinups and contributing artists, because it's not only a cool designed for her to draw, but you know, it makes for a richer Kickstarter project when they have all these different options and different contributors and stuff. But the crows that she's chasing, it's almost like they're werewolves. They're really malevolent, like mischief-making killer beasts that hide in the form of humans during the day, and then they're the murderous crows at night, pun intended. But then there's the whole angle of you don't know who's the crow in disguise, that kind of thing. And there's this spooky group of kids they come upon, and like water mines, and it's all really entertaining, and the stakes are all really high. And I'm not even sure how there is an issue 6 after the way that issue 5 ends, but the whole world is really solid. The art and color is really nice. The story is good, and the world is rich enough that they could go on to tell a lot of different tales in this world. So it's cool. The Few and the Cursed. You can check it out on Comixology.
Strangely enough, I ended up, before this, he did the 3-2-1 Fast Comics Kickstarter.
Yes.
I think I backed, I don't remember if I backed both volumes. I think I might have come in on volume 2 and also got volume 1. Because they had some pretty good deals, I seem to remember. You know, so, hey, it's been a few years, so don't quote me on that. But I remember thinking it was a pretty good to get a bunch of... Yeah, I did the two-book combo. I just pulled up Kickstarter.
So she's the redhead, makes her first appearance in those 3-2-1 Fast Comics. Okay. This stuff world does. So, yeah, and that stuff's available on Kickstarter or on Comixology also.
Yeah, it was fun. I was like, hey, why not? Every once in a while, you know, they were pretty thick volumes, if I remember correctly. So it was a lot of books, and I obviously got the paper and also digital too. But my problem with digital is I don't have a great library system. I don't know what you guys are doing. Like, they're on drives, but I don't have any. Kevin, Steve, what do you do with your digital books? Like, how do you have them organized?
You mean digital that's not in a cloud?
Yeah, do you leave them in the cloud? That's fine too. I have them on hard drives here.
Yeah.
Well, like I have some that are just like folder management things where it's like by publisher or whatever.
Yeah, I don't. They're just in a big folder.
Sure. I have Marvel, DC, Indie, Conan, Star Wars, because those two properties travel over between Marvel and Indie stuff. Archie magazines. Wow. and Kickstarters.
Oh, mine's more elaborate. I have Archie, Attack on Titan, Boom, Dark Horse, Dynamite, Fanta, God Hates Astronauts, Brownie, IDW, Image, Indies, Judge Dredd, Kickstarter, King Bone Press, Marvel Noise. Oh, wait, what's Marvel Noise again here? Oni Press, Private Eye, Top Cow, Tomorrow's, Valiant, Vault, and then miscellaneous stuff that's not even in a folder.
That's okay, funny.
So I need to go through and organize what you're saying. Yeah, I just have it in comics download folder.
Wow.
So then within each of those folders, Andrew, I have a red file, and then after I've read, you know, after I put it on my tablet, you know, when I port it onto my tablet, I move it into the red file, into the red folder, and then I know what I've read and what I haven't, and I make sure I read it before I delete it on my tablet.
See, I'm a fan of notepads on the desktop, or whatever. I guess you could put that onto whatever other device, since it's, you know, takes up the least amount of space. Not that space is really a concern, but just something about it simple, like you don't need any fancy devices or formatting or
devices.
It's just a notepad. It's like the simplest thing you can ever do.
No, all that makes. Yeah, I just have, and I've kind of, I think I've mislaid some of them too from time to time because of, you know, transferring computers and hard drives and all that. So yeah, it's not a great system. I'll be honest with you. Some of my hesitancy on the digital is that I don't have it. I mean, it's nice because it's mostly alphabetical, sort of. Even then, it's not. I think I have it by date modified, so it's like when I put it in the folder. So if I'm looking for the older stuff, I'm going back a ways. But yeah, I just didn't know if there was some kind of good system. I mean, for a while I put them on Dropbox, but it ate up the space way too quickly. Yeah. And then suddenly you're like, oh, I can't store. Especially because sometimes they, you know, some of these they'll give you like the ultra deluxe PDF that's this gigantic file with super high resolution.
One or two Humble Bundles later.
Yeah, well, I stopped doing Humble Bundles for that very reason. I just had all these, all this stuff, and I'm like, when am I going to sit and read all this?
Never. See, you're not supposed to stop, because then you're stopping the donations as well.
Yeah, but I have to stop. Otherwise, it goes, once it gets past a certain size and becomes unmanageable, then it just, I stop looking at it and I stop dealing with it, so.
That's like the problem, in quotes, with like the digital. The physical stuff, you have some kind of mental thing about, that's a lot of stuff.
Right.
On that nightstand or wherever you have it.
Well, not just that, but you know, depending on where you live, everybody at some point runs out of room. I mean, I don't know, maybe if you're Jeff Bezos, you don't, but most of us, at some point, you know, the collection's going to have an upper limit on how many issues, but digital.
I don't know. DC Noise, did they have a limit on that?
I mean, it's pretty... I mean, I've been over to Bob Breitel, Guinness Book of World Records holder, and even he has a limit on how much space it can go, so...
Really?
But he also has an indexing system.
What's his limit? Like a billion comics?
So he has one of the databases where if you type in the issue, it tells you which long box it's in, and then he can go retrieve it. You know, and each long box is alphabetized, so if he knows it's in long box 123 or whatever, he can go get it. But with digital, I don't have. The other thing is mostly I'm PDF, but I wonder if I should switch. When you get the choice on these things, boys, what do you go with? Which format? Do you do PDF or do you want the comic reader formats?
No, PDF usually. I mean, well, let me see.
I do both.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, I have both. I just lied. That's why I said maybe I should check. Yeah, I have usually PDF or the comic reader is the most prevalent, and sometimes both. Yeah, because sometimes it gets a little... It can get a little weird. I also look at the sizes sometimes, because some of them are just...
Right.
Like, just crazy, and I'm just like, I'm not doing that.
So is the PDF more compact versus, like, the CZ sometimes, or all those?
Sometimes I see the PDFs are lighter in size, and I'm like, no, I'd rather have a richer file.
That's the other
thing. Have it be a CBZ.
Like, you'll look at one, and if it looks terrible, then I'm just like, I'd rather take the other format.
What I like is like when you buy a comic from the panel syndicate from BKV's place, you can download either.
Nice. Yeah, a lot of places. I know some of the Kickstarters are like that as well, where they're like, oh, do you want? And I'm like, I'm always like, I guess PDF, because I'm just always...
I have
so many in PDF, and I feel like if I start mixing all this, it's going to get worse.
Yeah, like sometimes a PDF can be more. I'm like, I'm looking at some right now, and the PDFs are bigger.
Depends on what size the JPEGs are that made up the CBZ or CBR, because it's just a it's just a zipped file with a different extension. You know,
quick, someone get over to the bunker. Steve's talking gibberish. He's not speaking English anymore. Yeah, no, I just... Some of it... I mean, look, I'm a weird fellow. I like comic books. I'm not going to run away from it. So some of the organizational or collecting aspects of it are an element of comic books to me. And so coming to task with that part of it has been hard. I mean, that's why I love the Marvel Unlimited. Not to shill for them yet more. Because, you know, you just go and you read it and it's there. And they also store all my print copy codes or whatever, too. But I almost never go there. I usually go to the one that's in Marvel Unlimited. It's easier to navigate that than it is to go through my own library on their service that they store.
Yeah, I just have a mental, like, would the, if I'm using a different service, like, I have a mental, I don't know what you would call that. Like, when you go to use something that's streaming, or you go to use, like, something where you have a physical digital copy, like, even though it's digital and digital, it still, it equates differently in my in my head. I know when I'm reading something on a, like, on like a Marvel Unlimited, like, I don't spend as much time, but that's because I'm usually reading something that if I didn't buy it physically, I'm like probably less attached to it anyways. So,
well, so you don't have the ad, so that saves time.
Yeah, I guess that does save time. But then sometimes you want to look at that, like, old crazy time thing, you're like, what is going on? Space frogs? What are they selling?
And soon you'll be able to make the purchases through the Comixology app and not have to do it outside the app, just like in the old days. That'll be fun.
What?
Well, Apple changed the rules that now you can make in-app purchases without them getting a cut. So that's going to change. So Comixology is going to be able to have you be make in-app purchases. And when you're on Amazon Prime, you'll be able to buy video right from the video app without having to close out and go onto Safari or go onto a browser and go onto Amazon and then buy the thing and then go back to your player. It's going to save all that.
We won?
Yeah, we did.
Wow.
Finally. And you know what?
I stopped making all those purchases.
Kevin, we needed a win.
Yes. Well, again, not to tell an old story, but that's what helped get me back too, was when Marvel originally was selling copies of they were scanned actual issues of like the Spider-Man. And I love that because that had all the ads and all that stuff. And
yeah,
that really helped.
Oh, the old CD-ROMs.
Yeah. That was one of the things when I was getting back. I bought a bunch, you know, the Fantastic Four, the Silver Surfer. And I really like reading those because you have all the ads. You have the original coloring.
I got the Mad Magazine one that has all the Mad Magazines. That's awesome.
The only one
You know what seemed the most ridiculous thing, though, for digital comics? When they go, hey, we only have this color comic in black and white. Why don't we scan it in for you and then you can pay for it? I'm like, why even bother? it was a very, very strange thing to do.
The only one I missed was the Avengers one. And that one is now too expensive. But yeah, the Hulk. I have an X-Men
one. Did you get the Valiant one?
No, just by the time... That was a very short window because I think all the companies realized that was really stupid. They were giving away too much content too
they
cheaply.
Were.
And so, in fact, the Spider-Man, the first one I bought was before, and it was CD as opposed to the DVD ROMs. So it was like 16 discs as opposed to two or whatever. But it's a great, like, I love the ads. I like the old coloring. I like all that stuff. Letters, pages, everything is preserved. And it's a fun way for me to go and read that material. But, so I get with you on the ads. When I said it saves time on the ads, I didn't mean we always skip them. Sometimes that stuff is fun to look at, especially if it's in a different era and you're transported back or transported to an era you never went to. But I have more comics, if you guys would indulge me.
Fire away.
All right. You guys have heard of Dark Horse Comics, right?
No, sorry.
All right, how about Neil Gaiman?
Isn't he some famous novelist or something?
Coraline.
Fabio Moon or Gabriel Ba or any of these names ringing home to you?
I think those guys did a panel at TCAF.
Yeah, you just got Kevin excited. You just got Kevin's interest.
I'm talking about the little petite hardcover, How to Talk to Girls at Parties. Maybe there was also a soft cover. I don't know. So apparently based on a short story by Gaiman, adapted by Moon and Ba. And Moon and Ba are a team that I enjoy endlessly. So I would describe this as kind of like a dreamy, poetic coming-of-age story of two young men.
There's that word.
Bit of a twist. But for me, I don't really care. Like, I'm here, dialed up to be transported to the lush worlds of Moon and Ba. So, our two protagonists, two young men, from a boys' school going to a party with girls. And one guy is much more confident than the other one. Our perspective entrance character is less confident with girls. So, it's the two of them, and they go to this party, and it's filled with all sorts of thin, beautiful women. Much like Tarpe Mills, they don't have a lot of variation in body type either, but still, the watercolors and... I know sometimes it doesn't always work, but I feel that they don't overload the saturation. Like, sometimes the background will just be like a yellow. But it's not like... Or the background when they go into the party, like the character's in regular color and everything else is in red. But I feel like they don't beat it to death like sometimes can happen. So I think it's a nice bind because they'll also... temperate the colors, so it won't be just the one color, it'll be one with gradient, so it'll be like red with some yellow highlights in, sort of coasting across the panel. And I just really feel like the nature of the story is there, he has trouble talking to girls, and these girls are not normal. They're visitors from an alien planet or alien world or alien whatever, so the conversations are always odd, but he's awkward to begin with. And he sort of floats through the party talking to the different women in the sort of dreamy way that it happens. And like I said, that's the poetry one, and there's a nice segment with one of the girls. But I just feel that they're able to capture a dreamlike, idyllic quality, but the realism of, you know, like a geeky guy. Being a formerly geeky guy, I can relate to sort of the awkwardness at the party. And, oh, you gotta go talk to girls. That was always a hard one, especially at, I think these characters are 14 or 15 or whatever. So the different interactions with the women spell out their history. And then the friend that's good with the girls, he takes one up to the room and then he drags his friend out of there. And that sort of ruptures the idyllic. And I think we all have in our past evenings that were somewhat magical in a way. And that's what this reminds me of, like, some party you went to where everything, you just kind of hit it off perfectly. And like, you never see those people again or whatever, but you just had a great time. And you meet people from different places or different things. I don't know. It really captured a moment and a time, even though I feel like there's not a lot to it. Like there's no big twist or big complicated. Oh, I mean, I guess the twist involves the alien origins, but that's not even really that type of a twist. It's more the sort of surreal feel of like going to a party and having these interactions and then never seeing them again. I don't know. I really liked it, and I'm not normally one for those.
Cool.
Wow. There's some silence for you.
I said cool.
I was still thinking about the aliens.
Well, it's really and you guys, I'm sure, have seen Moon and Ba's work before, so you know the watercolor and the sort of
Casanova
sort of fun that they can have with this sort of theme. And by making the kid a little awkward, it just sold at home. I'm with my own personal reveries of those fun parties from our past. Ah, to be young again.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, for all of the shit we give Gaiman for being you know, big media star beyond his stature, perhaps. You know, he writes some good, clever stories that many times strike a pretty nice chord with me. So that's cool if he brought you to a good place with, you know, between the artwork and if the story helped inspire them to do their thing, then cool. That's what it should be.
Yeah, we just rewatched Starlight, the movie of his. It has Daredevil is the main guy in it. And Claire Danes.
From the Golden Age Hero?
No, from the Disney property. And it was just
I'm not familiar with that property.
Yeah. I thought you were like the big fan who loved reading random issues of the past, but that's for another show. But it just, there is sort of like a kind of fun, idyllic, like he calls back to worlds that didn't really exist. I feel like this nostalgia for a thing that never happened, but we all felt it anyways type of thing.
Wait, I just read it. Something like that.
What was it?
It was a big white creature. Was like from, like it was a character from the 1950s, like a monster, and it was making people, they were like nostalgic for like merchandise and a TV show and like all these things that didn't exist. So that they were like winning the corporate, I don't know, mental space battle.
Hey, as I look around my desk at a bunch of old toys and new toys and old comics, I'm hardly one to throw stones at the nostalgia appeal. All right, I had a little more, but I think this is a good spot to wrap this up. I want to leave the taste and thrill of what could possibly be 450. I've built this up like I built up 400. It's something I enjoy doing. And some may say it doesn't pay off, but isn't the journey the point? That was that last comic. Jeez, people, don't be so literal. But thanks for listening. Kevin,
your catchphrase. I'm still thinking here about why I organize my comics differently digitally than I would physically. And I'm just like, why is that? Like, why isn't it this A, B, C? Like, why isn't it not just alphabetical? Why is it all publisher-based?
Because you don't need to find them to sell.
Oh, it's so weird. Go. It's so weird.
You're not trying to turn them over. You're not trying to flip them.
So, Steve, you don't put little notes in the file name about who the artist is?
I try to keep my file names as small as possible, Andrew.
Yeah,
like a good file namer should.
I think I'm supposed to say something like, read more comics.
Sounds like we should all read more of our digital comics.
Yeah.
I could do a lot. Maybe that'll be 450.
Well, for the next episode, make sure to read that Private Eye comic.
Private Eye. I thought we all talked about that back in the day. Are we going to do a revisit?
Oh, wait. Not Private Eye.
They're watching you.
Yeah. Those private eyes. Those eyes without a face.
Well, the other problem for me is I have so much of this stuff in print and then the digital copy. And so it's like, oh, I wonder if I should... Do you guys make any notation if you also have a print or not print?
What?
Well, some of this stuff is just a backup. Like, I have a print copy, so it's fine. But other stuff I only have in digital. So I didn't know if you kept any distinction.
I use Comic Base as my on my comic archive, you know, my collection manager, and I have a database that's just my digital comics. Mm. So I have a completely different place to log them as having them.
Yeah. See, I waste too much time organizing and pricing comics as it is, so yeah, I'll never get around to that.
Yeah, it's hard when you reach that age where you're like, I'm gonna die and there'll be comic books I own that I haven't read.
Well, sometimes you just sell them and you're like, if this sells, I never read it. Well, if I never read it by now, it's just like, what's the difference?
Good point.
Oh, but then there's those things that you're like, ooh, what? Because I don't know about for you guys, but my desktop where I store, you know, look at my drives that have the digital comics on them, the covers don't show just in my folder. So, you know, usually it takes, I double click on them to see things and, you know, there's like, oh, that's that? Oh, there's, you know, or that looks interesting. I do come across fun things that I forgot about that I shouldn't have let go by.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then there's the stuff where you don't really remember, you know, it was some type of Kickstarter or whatever. And you're like, wait, did I read that? Maybe I did. Maybe I didn't. I don't know. I can't remember.
And it's okay to read it again.
Yeah. Oh, believe me, I've
reread, really get your money's worth.
Reread plenty. I always feel like sometimes if I don't really remember it, it probably is saying something to me that I should be listening to. But yeah, it's funny. I wonder if there's that guy out there that organizes files by like creators. Like, here's my John Byrne folder. Here's my.
Yeah. I mean, I did have one folder. If you noticed in all that stuff, I did have one creator folder, which is weird when you think about it.
You know what? I have a couple of creator folders too. I have a Ditko one and I have a Wrightson one. Not I'm her. Guilty. Sorry. I'm guilty.
There you go. So if we audit your computer, Steve, I better not find a Wrightson book in another folder.
Well, they're all in the, they're all subfolders of my indie comics folder. So there.
Nice. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Tune in. Find out what will be 450. Bum, bum, bum.
I can't wait. I'm eating popcorn right now, just thinking about what it might be.
You better get all those 450 issues out.
Later.